podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to AI Scouted on Anfield Index Pro. I'm Dave Hendrick, joined as always by Mr. Carl Matchett. How are you, sir?
Marginally concerned, Dave.
Marginally concerned?
Yes.
What is the cause of your concern?
Well, I've been waiting for like half a season now for you to have your 40-minute late turn-up, and so far it hasn't happened, and I'm a little concerned. So I'm concerned on the one hand that it might not happen at all, and I'll be stuck with losing this season for the late scores. And I'm concerned, on the other hand, that the reason it's not happening is because someone has replaced Dave Hendrick with an ulterior Dave Hendrick, who has many of his mannerisms, but not the key one of being late for everything.
No, I'm working on being more punctual. It's actually something I've set myself a target to do, to be more punctual, and not for your benefit, mostly for Guy's, because remember, you only have to deal with me once, maybe twice a week. Poor Guy has to deal with me every single day. And I realized I was probably taking up about 2 hours of his week by being late for absolutely everything. So I'm saving Guy 100 hours a year now by being on time for stuff. And so far it's going well. I was 2 minutes late today, but that was because I was finishing off the two-footed. So I have been penalized for 2 minutes today. But you're still miles out in front.
It was one bad day. I've been over this.
Right, so we are going to record a couple of podcasts today, but on this one, you wanted to take a look at some Premier League teams that you think are in need of rejuvenation, I suppose?
Yes, or at least some direction as to what they're going to do. It's quite a nice week this week, because Liverpool aren't playing, so we've got nothing specific to be angry about. And nothing to go over and over and over that we've already discussed over and over and over. So it's a nice opportunity to open the floor up and look at other teams who are doing even worse than us. And obviously, first and foremost, whenever there's a problem at Liverpool, no matter how bad things get, you always know that there is one club who can be relied on to be even worse plight than us. Hello, Everton.
Our friends in blue. What a bunch of lads. What a bunch of lads. Carl Matchett, Frank Lampard has been sacked. The sweet prince is no more.
I mean, as far as inevitabilities go, this one's up there, I have to say. One victory since the 1st of October in all competitions. I mean, I know that there were more things at play than just results when Benitez was there, but the fume at the results when he departed and the quietness towards the same type of people, let's say, at the current results is just quite embarrassing, to be perfectly honest. 8 defeats in the last 9, including 2 games against Bournemouth, no less. That's quite impressive. How they managed to avoid the 9th game, which was actually away to Man City, is just one of those footballing things. So not just that, but obviously then the news that one of their prime assets in Anthony Gordon is being targeted for about a third of the price that they rejected in the summer. And now the club itself is up for sale. It kind of feels like Everton is coming to a really, really big crossroads in their, not in their history, but certainly in their future, let's say.
Yeah, so just to highlight how bad they've been of late. So, like you said, the league form has been an absolute shambles. They beat Southampton on the 1st of October. And since then, their only win in all competitions was a 3-0 home win against a very messy Crystal Palace team. That is not ideal, considering they have played 12 league games and won one of them. and two cup games and obviously lost both of them. So one win in 13 games, two draws, one against Fulham, one against City, both of which, by the way, are good results. But to further highlight how bad this is, Southampton have won one league game since the middle of October, and that was against Everton. And Bournemouth have won two games in all competitions since the 8th of October. They beat Leicester on the 8th of October. Since then, they have played 11, 12, 13, 14 games. They've drawn one of them, which was their last league game against Forest, and they've won two, both against Everton, and then they lost the rest of them. Everton are not just bad, they are horrendously bad. They are the worst team in the Premier League right now, without a shadow of a doubt. And they're the one team you'd look at and say there's no real hope for them. Because at least with Southampton, you can look at their squad and there's a lot of reasons for their fans to be optimistic about the future. Even if they went down, I still think they could keep most of that squad together and be a very exciting team next season in the Championship to come back up. I'm not sure about the manager, but whatever. Bournemouth have new owners. They're spending some money. It looks like Nico Jackson's on his way. I want to get your opinion on him. Ouattara signed. I don't think they're the right signings for now because I think they needed defenders, but they're two very exciting young attackers coming in for a combined fee of about 40 million, which is sizable money when you're Bournemouth and you're down there. But for Everton, there's nothing. Like, as you said, Gordon wants out. By all accounts, Amadou Onana is now looking for a way out and would like to go in this window, not waiting for the summer. Bielsa has said the squad is too slow and doesn't want the job. The stadium is sort of up in the air because Mashiri can't afford it without Usmanov's billions. There's conflicting messages about the status of the owner because the Guardian have a report that says the club is for sale. And Mashiri, in an interview he recorded on Saturday, has said the club is not for sale, but he is looking for investment largely to cover the cost of the stadium. But even if the club is up for sale, according to the Guardian, the asking price is 500 million. But it's not just 500 million, because if you buy the club, you're also buying the commitment to build the stadium, which is about another 500 million. So you're talking about £1 billion before you get into anything else, including obviously fixing the playing staff. So £1 billion for a club that could well be a Championship club come August.
Yeah, it's very, very problematic. And in the short term, you look at the results that they've had of late, and even like just the last, what, since Boxing Day, they've played all the teams around them. And that's the worrying thing, is that they haven't taken any points off any of those clubs that they're directly battling against. Go back a little bit further, they lost to Leicester when Leicester were either bottom or just off the bottom start of November.
Yeah.
Then the Bournemouth one that you mentioned, they lost to Wolves, who were bottom. Brighton, Man City, Man United, obviously not. Southampton, bottom. They lost to them. West Ham, who were just inside or just outside the relegation zone.
Yeah, they were 18th, yeah.
They've lost to them as well. So it's not just the fact that all the defeats are bad, it's that they are losing to all the worst teams in the league. And there's not really much to look at and say, well, this is what they can change immediately now and go on a run against Arsenal, Liverpool, Leeds, Aston Villa and take big points hauls from those.
Yeah.
I think it's fine that, you know, Lampard has gone like when he has, if it wasn't going to be any earlier, because then the new manager coming gets basically two games to try and get a system, let's say, in place against teams who would be expected to beat them. And then for two really, really important matches, they are at home, home to Leeds, home to Villa. They've got to try and get something out of at least one of those games, really, before we'll be heading towards the run-in, really. So it's very, very difficult looking for them at the minute, but I do maintain that out of the, let's say, the bottom six clubs, Everton shouldn't be in the bottom three, not with the squad that they have. I know it's not perfect, and we've gone over it before about how they've done a lot of silly things, and they are definitely lacking in certain areas, but I do still think that there's enough quality there to not be in the bottom three.
See, I do as well, but then when I look at the league, and let's take from Leicester down, because there's basically 3 points separate Leicester to Southampton. Seven teams, 3 points separate them. I think Leicester's squad overall is on about par with Everton, but they have more match winners. They've got Madison, they've got Barnes, they've got Vardy, they've got Tielemans. I look at Leeds, I think there's a very similar level of talent, but I think Leeds have better attacking weapons and they're more willing to spend money. I think West Ham flat out have a far better team and a better manager than West Ham than Everton have had. I think West Ham are the most disappointing team of the season. I think Moyes is very lucky to still be in a job. I think Wolves probably have a similar level of talent, but I'd rather have the Wolves squad moving forward than the Everton squad. They're definitely better than Bournemouth, there's no question. And they're better than Southampton, but projecting out, say, 2 years, I'd much rather have the Southampton squad than the Everton squad. But with that said, I do look at their squad and think there's definitely a good 11 in that squad. Now, you know my thoughts on Pickford. I'm not a fan. But he is England's number one. And he's not a dreadful goalkeeper. He's just not a great goalkeeper. If you go Pickford in goal with the back four of, let's say, Patterson right back, Godfrey and Tarkowski, or even Mina if fit and Tarkowski, and then Michael Enko at left back. That's not a bad defence. That is a defence that could keep clean sheets in this league, or at least limit opposition to one goal a game. If Godfrey's not playing in defence, you could sit him in holding midfield next to Onana and just have the two of them patrolling around protecting that defence. But if he is in defence, you go Onana and Idrissa Gana Gueye. So you've got experience and leadership, you've got loads of ball winning, loads of aggression, you've got power and pace. That's a solid double pivot with options like Doucouré, Iwobi, Tom Davies and James Garner. So it's a solid midfield group. But where I think they fall down is the attack. So we know that at his best, Calvert-Lewin can get goals in this division, but he's been injured so frequently over the last couple of seasons that it is getting concerning. And they don't really have another option because Neil Mopey's not really a number nine. He's a 9.5. I haven't seen enough of Ellis Sims to make any kind of judgment. So there's an issue with scoring goals. The wide players, I like McNeil, and I actually think McNeil on the left with Calvert-Lewin up front, I think that could be a little bit of a cheat code if both are fit and in form, because McNeil's a great crosser and Calvert-Lewin might be the best number nine in the league at attacking crosses. So if you had McNeil on one side and Damari Gray on the other, I do think that could be good. The issue I have is that number 10 position. The best player at the club for it is probably Alex Iwobi. The best player they own for it, if they could get his head right, would be Dele Alli. But he's away on loan. Now, might be coming back. They tried to get Danjuma, and I assume that's the kind of role they were looking at for him, was to play off Calvert-Lewin with wingers either side. So, you know, even going through, I don't think Anthony Gordon is part of their best 11. So while they were very stupid to turn down whatever it was Chelsea offered, if they can get 25 to 30 million in this window and flip that into a player that can actually contribute for them, or even two players that could contribute for them, it's definitely something I'd look at doing. The big issue I have, though, is Calvert-Lewin, is fitness. Because if he's not there, I just don't see where goals come from. And this season, you look at their goal scorers in the league. Connor Cody has won. He's the only defender to score in the league this season for them.
Yerry Mina has won.
Yerry Mina has won is right. Yerry Mina got one recently. So Yerry Mina has won. So they've got two goals out of defence. From midfield, Onana has won. And he's the only... Oh, and Iwobi has won. So no midfielder with more than one goal. Only two goals from the midfield. And then in attack, Gray has 3, 5 in all competitions. Gordon has 3. McNeil has 2. Calvert-Lewin has 1. Yerry Mina has 1. And they were the beneficiaries of an own goal. They've scored 15 goals in the league this season.
Are you that person who has everything? The coolest merch and those must-have fan threads? Well, over at our Anfield Index shop, we've gone that extra mile when it comes to pimping up your Liverpool collection. From our popular range of bespoke design t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies and hats, to our signature edition mugs, prints and coasters, all provided with fast worldwide shipping. We have something for every red. We also stock official LFC merchandise and are licensed with the Premier League and UEFA to sell official iron-on shirt badges and sleeve patches. As a listener to this podcast, you can get 10% off everything with coupon code AIPRO10. Just head over to anfieldindex.shop or find us on Etsy by searching for Anfield Index.
Their third top assister this season, Carl. They've got Iwobi on 5, Onana on 2. Do you know who the only two other players to score, to get an assist for Everton are this season? Connor Cody and Jordan Pickford. And both of them were just long punts over the top. So, the lack of goals, the lack of creativity, that to me can be solved if Calvert-Lewin is fit and you can get McNeil playing well on the left and Gray on the right. But if I was walking into that job right now, that is the basis of what I would be looking to set up. Calvert-Lewin, McNeil one side, Gray the other, Onana plus Idrissa Gueye or James Garner or Iwobi, whoever is the best fit next to Onana. The back four, I think, is an easy enough pick. I would go Patterson, Godfrey, Tarkowski and Mykolenko. Largely because I don't trust Yerry Mina's fitness and I don't want a defender who's going to be in one game, out the next. Now, I know at the moment Patterson's injured, but Seamus Coleman will come in and he'll give you 6 out of 10. That's fine. But I would be setting up that goalkeeper, Pickford, that back four, and the two holding midfielders. And those I would play every single game. Every single game I can. Whatever midfielder wins that spot next to Onana, that's who I'd be going with every single game, to try and build some stability. The only reason they're not nailed to the bottom of the league is because they had a decent run defensively early in the season. But that would be that. And then two wingers and a striker. And then I'd be looking to take the Gordon money and find someone to play in that number 10 role. Someone that can give me a bit of creativity and some goals. And I'd probably look at Illiman Ndiaye from Sheffield United, who I think is ready to step up. I think you'd get him for probably around 25 million. And then I'd look to find a striker to bring in on loan, if possible, as a backup to Calvert-Lewin, who can do similar enough things. Now, one of the ideal ones could have been Weghorst, but obviously he's gone to United. But if I could get another big striker in who is aggressive, who's decent in the air, who has got a decent bit of speed, that's what I'd look to do.
I mean, I think that Everton's best chance at this at the minute is, I did say this at the start of the season, what I think Lampard's job is really, and he's failed miserably in doing it. This was much more about organisation. Everton need, first and foremost, a coach to put them in order, because the back four that you've mentioned have played. They have played, and they've played together. Godfrey, not quite so much, and obviously Patterson's been in and out with injury, but basically those individuals have been the go-to ones when they're available. But the problem is that they're all over the place. And the problem is that they have chopped and changed, and the players in front of them have been a double pivot, and then it's been a three, and then it's been a little bit all over the place. And they've never really, since those early first weeks of the season, looked like a very, very cohesive unit. And it's going to be very difficult for them to get out of where they are if they can't do that really quickly. I thought when the links came out first that Bielsa was a very, very poor idea for them. If their plan was to stay up this season, it would be hell watching those players trying to do what he asked them to do.
It would be hilarious. But the one thing that you lose with Bielsa is the only thing they've had this season is they've had a bit of defensive structure. And you lose that with Bielsa because he'll make them go man-to-man. And you can't ask players like James Tarkowski and Connor Cody to go man-to-man against opposition players because they will get torn apart. They work in systems. The other option you'd have is to stick with the back three and go Godfrey, Tarkowski, Mykolenko, bring him back in as the left-sided centre-back, which I think is his best role, left-side centre-back in a back three, and then play Patterson and Ruben Vinagre as the wingers, as the wing-backs. Because I think Vinagre is a good player. I don't understand why he's played so little this season. I hate watching Mykolenko play as a wing-back. I think that's awful. And then you go two in midfield. So you keep a lot of what Frank has done, which is that defensive base of seven. Gray, McNeil, Calvert-Lewin. Now, that's doing with no signings. But I don't know if that's good enough to keep them up. Because I just don't know there's enough goals there. Because I can't trust Calvert-Lewin at this point.
I mean, I personally, with what Everton have at the minute, would just go with two up front. And whether that's a 4-4-2 or a 3-5-2, I would do that either way. And play Calvert-Lewin and Gray. I think Gray is probably their best ball carrier. He's not shy of shooting, that's for sure. He gets himself into good areas, and he's one with speed, and he can run the channels because obviously he's played wing quite a lot of the time. And when Calvert-Lewin's not there, Morpé can do a passable impression at the hold-up parts of his game, not the goal scoring. Obviously, it's never really been his biggest strength since he was a youth player. But I think you have to just rely on Everton getting enough situations rather than actually going all out and creating the chances and being a really good build-up side at this point. You've got, you know, half a season, basically, and you need to first and foremost shut the door at one end and secondly be a little bit more clinical than they are at the other end. So if they're not bringing in, I think, two attacking options, let's say, I would just play the two up front and try to get the second balls off them, use people like Onana and maybe Iwobi if they go with the three in midfield to get forward in support and be those extra players, and basically try and get numbers, movement, second balls, and try to score a few more off there and set pieces, because Everton haven't been good enough off them.
No, they haven't at all. They haven't been good enough at all. There's part of me that thinks, you know, you might as well take risks. And I wonder if bringing back Dele and playing him just off Calvert-Lewin, not as a 10, but as a second striker, and going direct and trying to go from fullback to the head of the striker and getting Dele on to flick-ons, also having the opportunity to work down the left and having Gray raid in off the right, McNeil off the left, obviously, Gray raiding in off the right. I do wonder if that could work, but Dele's been so poor for the last few years that I'm guessing not. The thing that strikes me about Lampard is that, you know, we hear about this man management, you know, he's a man manager. Well, I look at certain players in that squad. There's a reason Anthony Gordon wanted out. And I think Frank Lampard was part of that. There's a reason Onana wants out. And again, I think Lampard might be part of that. But he's frozen out Michael Keane, who's a senior player. And while he's got his flaws, he's a big voice in that dressing room. He's frozen out Doucouré, who last season was arguably the best player until he got injured. He sent Dele on loan, having convinced Dele to turn down Crystal Palace to sign for him. He's kind of frozen out Mopé in recent weeks as well. He sent Gbamon on loan in the summer. Gbamon, by the way, has now played, I think it's 14 or 15 games for Trabzonspor, which is hilarious considering he only played 8 games in 3 years for Everton. So he's nearly at double the amount of games this season. But like, for me, Gbamon next to Onana as a midfield pair would be really strong. Now, I don't know if they've got an option to terminate that loan and bring him back, but I'd look at doing that if I could. I know there's been a lot of reports that Besiktas would like to send back Dele. I think I'd take them both back if I could, because they can't possibly be worse than what Everton have been this season. They just can't possibly be worse. But I'd be quite happy to sell Anthony Gordon and use that money to get players in. Like, if they could have sold Gordon a week ago, Nico Jackson would have made some sense as a signing for them. Now, he was going to go to Southampton. Now it looks like he's going to Bournemouth. I can't help but think Everton could have gotten in on signing him. And like I say, I would be looking to bring in someone like NJ from Sheffield United. I think he's one of the best players in the Championship this season. And every time I watch him play, he stands out. Every time I watch him play, he makes something happen. And he's got 10 goals this season, 28 games. He's also got a bunch of assists. He's kicked on from last year. I just think there's obviously not a whole lot of money to spend. So you need to get Gordon out, get some money in, and get players that can actually help you. Because Anthony Gordon had a couple of good games and seemed to decide that he was far better than he actually is. And if he's not committed to being there, just get him gone and stop messing around with having players at your club that don't want to be there. It's such a bad situation for them at the moment, though.
Half-season prediction. Do you think they stay up or go down?
I think they go down. I do. I think they go down. I think they're nearly too far gone at this point in terms of the rot that's set in. I think the mindset is all wrong. And I think when you've got two young players like Gordon and Onana skipping training in January, it doesn't read well. And, you know, you look at if they're in this situation, Pickford's got to be having a look and thinking, I really don't want to sign up for more of this. I think I might want to get myself out of here as well. So his head could be distracted. Tarkowski was just in this kind of mess last season at Burnley. He's got to be thinking, this is not what I signed up for. I didn't want to come and be in the relegation mix again. Cody's only there on loan, and he's not going to want to go back to the Championship, even though that might be his level. Mykolenko can't be happy. Like, you'd look up and down the squad and you'd wonder how many of these players are fully committed to the cause. How many of these players are fully committed to going out and giving everything they have for the good of Everton? And I don't know that there's going to be a whole lot. I think if the right manager comes in, maybe he can get the attitudes improved and turned around, but I think they're going down. And I wouldn't be surprised if they went down bottom.
Well, if they do, it isn't going to be because of this season. It is going to be because of a long, long run. And
It's the last 10 years.
Yeah.
It's everything they've done since Moyes. Hello, I'm here to annoy you. I'm here to annoy you into listening to more of me and more of others on EPL Index. We don't just have the Anfield Index stuff. We've got EPL Index as well, which covers the entirety of the Premier League. And we have three podcasts and a whole bunch of really good writing on eplindex.com. The podcasts are my own two-footed podcast, which is every day at 4 p.m., Monday through Friday, covering the whole league. We have A Tad Predictable, hosted by Tadiwa. You know Tadiwa, he does Anfield Index. He presents A Tad Predictable before every Premier League match week. And then Kevin De Vries and his crew on the EPL Roundtable there every week after the Premier League match week. So make sure you listen to everything we're doing on EPL Index and follow us there on Twitter at EPL Index. Thank you. Bye-bye. Because they got Roberto Martinez in. They had that good first season and then things started to go poorly. They binned him off. They got Koeman. They spent a lot of money and most of it badly. We all remember the summer where they signed like 11 attacking midfielders. Then they went and tried to get Marco Silva from Watford. They got Marcel Brands in. And that was to be the pair, Brands and Silva. That was what Everton were going to build around. They did a good first season, but they spent money badly. And if you go back through the last 10 years of their transfers, there's so many misses there, it'll make you laugh and nearly cry. But as soon as things went badly for Silva, rather than allowing him to work his way out of it, rather than giving him time and being patient, they just binned him off. And then they've gone through Ancelotti, and as soon as he got a better job, he was always going to leave. They didn't give Rafa enough time, but that was a bad appointment to begin with. And then you appoint Frank Lampard. What do you think is going to happen? He's not a good manager. You're appointing him based on the fact that his name is Frank Lampard, not based on a managerial track record. And when you start doing things like that, the rot is in. And they've made so many mistakes. And there's a reason Marcel Brands is gone back to PSV and is doing well again. Because you didn't create a good environment for him to work at Everton. There's a reason Marco Silva is doing really well with Fulham, but didn't do well with you. It's because you don't create a good environment. You don't back managers. You don't give them the support they need. You don't give them the time they need. And some of it comes from the fans, who can be very toxic when they want to be. But I think stronger ownership there probably has them as a top half club, but Marco Silva maybe still in charge.
Right, well, that's enough of Everton for today. On to the next club then. You mentioned them briefly in passing. I want to speak to you about West Ham and what is going on here. Because this was a club who, for two seasons, a third season, part of a third season at least, looked like they'd found stability and a way to go forward. And I think that part of the reason they have not continued to go forward is a really, really bad recruitment work. Or good recruitment work, but not good implementation of those players being recruited. And 2 years later, it's kind of the same team, and West Ham are in the relegation zone.
Yeah, so, look, we know a couple of things. David Moyes is a good manager, okay? I think we can all say that and not be laughing at it or anything. But David Moyes is a good manager. But there's also a ceiling on what David Moyes can achieve with your club. And I do wonder if they hit their ceiling last season. I mean, they had two seasons where they finished in the European spots. They had that good run in the Europa League last season. And I do think that might have been Moyes maxing out what he's capable of at the club. But in the summer, they went and they did a lot of work. And I think they actually bought pretty well. They bring in Naif Agard. Now, he's been injured for a chunk of the season, so that's a blow for them because they spent big money on him and they expected him to be locked in. Him and Zuma, that was it. That was going to be the pairing. He's missed most of the season, and Zuma's had probably three different injuries by now. They bring in Areola, who had a great run with them last season in the Europa League, who we know is a very good goalkeeper. And yet, Fabianski is still first choice, despite the fact that he makes a plethora of errors every single week. Now, they're not goal-costing errors, but they're the same errors he's been making his whole career. So the fact that Areola is not first choice in the Premier League is reason number two for this current mess. The centre-back issues is reason number one. They bring in Flynn Downs. They give him a couple of games. He looks pretty impressive, and now he's buried on the bench, and Thomas Souček is still starting him in field, despite the fact that he's been poor for a full year now. They bring in Skamaka, who I think is excellent, and they haven't played to his strengths at all. They bring in Max Cornet, who I like. He's a good player. But he's had some injuries. They bring in Thilo Kehrer, who's okay, but I mean, he never set the world alight at PSG, which is why West Ham bought him for 26 million less than PSG bought him for. Emerson Palmieri is not a player I like, and I didn't like that deal. But I do think he's better than Aaron Cresswell at this point, especially if you want to play with wingbacks. And he's only recently getting in the team. They bring in Paqueta and seemingly have no idea how to use him. And now they've brought in Danny Ings, which reeks of a David Moyes signing, but he's injured already. I think there's a really good team here, a really good 11 at West Ham. But Moyes, I think, is too scared to move away from certain players who helped him achieve good seasons the last 2 years. And the last factor is two very important players for them. Maybe their two best players last season, Bowen and Rice, have both been awful this season. Now, Bowen got two against Everton, but he has been crap all year. And Declan Rice has been dreadful this season. And if I was Moyes, I would have been on the phone to him during the World Cup, and I'd have fucking lit on him. Because he does an interview or a press conference and starts talking about wanting to play in the Champions League and about moving on. This is your club captain, sitting in front of the world, talking about going and playing in other clubs, playing the Champions League. That's completely unacceptable. Completely unacceptable. And speaks to Rice's personality and his commitment to the club. So, I don't think, like, Rice is their captain. I think he's, as a captain, I think he's not suited at all. There's no leadership in that team. You can see it when you watch them play. You see it, West Ham fans talk about it all the time. There's no leadership in that dressing room right now at all. So, that's a factor. When your club captain is standing up in front of the world talking about going and playing for different clubs, his teammates have got to be looking and going, okay, so this is a stepping stone club. I'm only here until I can go somewhere else, because that's the example my captain sets. I think Moyes, at the start of January, I would have gone to the board and said, look, if we can get 80, 90 million for Declan now, let's do it and let's reinvest that in 2 to 3 really good players who'll improve us as a team. But the issue is, I don't think Moyes is brave enough to move away from the players that he deems the ones that got him 6th and then 7th.
Well, we know a little bit about not moving on players quickly enough, I suppose. I think that West Ham, again, should have enough to stay up this season at the very least, but if they hadn't won at the weekend, let's say, against Everton, would that be completely different? Would we look at this so differently? Because they'd be on 15 points. You know, Everton are on 15 and 19th. West Ham would be on 15 and 19th if they'd have lost that game instead of winning it 2-0. I think the way they played in that game shows they are comfortably better in terms of build-up play and structure than certainly than Bournemouth, than Everton, than Southampton have been so far. So I think that there are plenty of worse teams set up than West Ham. But again, the problem for them, similar to Everton, is that they've been so poor at goal scoring this season. I don't think Scamacca's been what they expected, but I don't know what they expected, because he is what he is. You know, there's not going to be anything particularly different from him. But like you say, with Bowen underperforming for the season, with the number 10 not playing as well behind a new number 9, who they're not getting the best out of. And again, it seems like Mikel Antonio, when he's available, he seems to be still the go-to, but I don't think he's performed particularly well for about 18 months now, really.
Same.
He's had a couple of injuries, obviously, and you know, he's just one of those who maybe hit a peak for maybe 2 years or so and has tailed off that again now. And I even think that people like Paulo Fornals, who's played a really big role for them over the last couple of years, I think they look to them too much for what they are. I like Fornals. I think he's a good player, but he's not like a creative genius match winner week after week, and it's kind of...
No, he's one that keeps things ticking over.
Yeah, and it's kind of who they look to, and like Suchek didn't start the season particularly well, and I think Ben Johnson's a very good player, but he's been out the side as well, so it's...
Yeah, Ben Johnson should undoubtedly be their starting right back, but for some reason, Vladimir Soufal is still playing, and Soufal has been dreadful because he got overplayed. See, one of the problems here is West Ham last season had quite a small squad, or at least a small squad of players that Moyes trusted. And he ran them into the ground going Premier League, Europa League, Premier League, Europa League, Premier League, Europa League. Wasn't rotating at all. And if you look at it, Soufal, key in that, awful season so far. Suchek, key in that, awful season so far. Rice, key in that, awful season so far. And Bowen, key in that awful season so far. Because they got overplayed last year, and he's still overplaying them this season. Because he's not willing to just say, right, we're going to leave. Declan, you're going to sit out the next game. Flynn Downs, you're going to start in midfield. Next to Fornals, the two of you just sit in. You know what to do. Just keep things simple. Shield that defence. Move the ball on. Don't overplay. Don't take too much out of the ball. Get it wide. Get us forward. That's all you need to do. But he doesn't have the guts to do it. It's like he thinks if Rice is not there, the whole thing's going to fall apart. But it's falling apart with Rice there.
Yeah, again, I think there's been a lack of evolution, I suppose, is probably the word here. You can't just be the same and the same results happen, because everyone around you is improving or trying to as well. And obviously it only takes like one or two things to go wrong for you and one or two things to go right for half a dozen other teams. And you're suddenly completely the opposite end of the table. And like I said before, the number 9 and number 10 positions being the ones which have not gone particularly right for West Ham this year is very, very problematic. I think overall I'd back Moyes out of most of the other managers down there to do enough from a defensive standpoint at the very least and be organised enough, but goal scoring, big issue. They need to get a bit more out of who they've got. And even people like Maxwell Cornet, who I think has been quite a big miss, I think they could have used him very, very nicely this season. They need a bit more from maybe Benrahma and so on, but just about, I think they'd be okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think defensively they're still pretty good. They've conceded 25 in the league this season. That's better than the four teams below them, better than the five teams above them, also better than Brentford, Fulham, Brighton, Spurs, and level with Liverpool and United. So, you know, defensively they've been all right, but they've only scored 17 goals, and that's just not going to get it done. And it's not acceptable when you've got that group of attacking players. Now, again, injuries are an issue, but, you know, Scamacca, Cornet, Antonio, Bowen, Benrahma.
Well, you
should be scoring more goals.
Yeah, I agree completely. But what I would say is probably just by simplicity of playing style and who they've now got, I think Ings probably gets them half a dozen goals across the remaining 18 games, 19 games. Let's say he plays 15, 16.
That'd be a surprise if he did. That'd be a 12-goal season, and Danny Ings only ever done that once in the Premier League.
I think he's...
Twice, rather.
Yeah, I think he's probably one of the ones who'll get a lot of game time, score a few goals in clusters. That's 4, 5, 6 goals for him, I think.
Mm. Yeah, no, like I do think Ings is a decent... I don't know that I would have paid $15 million for a 30-year-old Danny Ings with his injury history. But if he didn't have the injury history, you'd absolutely do it. And I think he is the type who can play with Scamacca. I think he can play with Antonio. I think he can play up front on his own. So he does give you... Just give you decent options there. But Antonio, you're right. I mean, he hasn't been good for about 18 months. And part of it is he's now 32. He'll be 33 in March. People seem to forget that he didn't really come to prominence at Forest until he was 24. And he had one season there, jumped on to West Ham. And this is year 8 at West Ham for him. He's been around a long, long time. He's got a lot of miles on him.
And not most of that was as a forward, which is now all he plays.
Remember, he played as a wing back against us.
Yeah, he was a wing back. He was a right winger initially, and then they moved into wing back. And I think he even played centre mid a couple of times and as a 10.
Yeah.
So he's been all over. This, you know, he's a backup forward that should be fine. But don't expect him to be the one who's keeping you up now.
No, definitely not. He's a support player now. But they've got to get Scamacca back fit, and him and like the future of West Ham. If Rice is going to leave in the summer, the future of West Ham, at least for next season, is Scamacca and Paqueta. They're the two, with Bowen and Cornet maybe as the supporting options who'll get you goals from wide areas. But you need to figure out how you're going to play to get the most out of, you know, the Brazilian international you bought to play in midfield for a significant chunk of money, who's a very, very good player, and the Italian international striker, who is an outstanding number 9, if you give him the right level of service. And these lads are more than capable of doing well. I mean, Scamacca was great last season for Sassuolo. He was really good the year before in a bad Genoa team. If you give him the right supply, he will score you goals. And not only will he score goals, he'll create goals for others. But you've got to use him in the right way. And using him as if he's Mikel Antonio is not the right way, because he's a very different type of player.
West Ham, stay up or go down?
I think they stay up. I do think they stay up. And I think they'll have one more move in them in this window. I think they'll look to bring in one more player. I think they could look to maybe bring in someone in midfield, because I think that's an area where they're a little bit stale at the moment and a little bit lacking in legs. Because as much as I like Fornals and I do quite like Flynn Downs, neither of them are really dynamic players, and Souček is basically a building at this point. So I think you've got to get someone else dynamic in there to go with Rice. And they wanted Amadou Onana in the summer. So I wonder if they might look for somebody of a similar makeup to him. Maybe someone like a Kefren Touram from Nice, though whether he joined them in the situation they're in, I don't know. But somebody who can be a big rangy box-to-box midfielder and, you know, play with Rice and have, you know, you go, I go. You go, I'll sit. You sit, I'll go. That type of relationship is what will work best for Rice. And obviously then, you know, ideally it's the player who can replace Rice in the summer in that more kind of dynamic role. But yeah, I think they stay up. They've got more than enough talent. They've got a good manager. And, you know, when you look at the bottom of the league, the only other one I would say with certainty in the bottom six that I think is a good manager is Lopetegui. Because I think Jesse Marsh, the jury's still out a little bit on him. He's a good coach, but is he a good manager? That's the question. I'm not sold on Gary O'Neill. Everton don't have a manager, and I think the fella at Southampton might be a bit of a spoofer. He strikes me as Brendan Rodgers 2.0.
Right, well, final question before we go to the final team, just because we're leaving this end of the table now. Which three do you think are going down at this point? Everyone down there except for Leeds is on 20 matches played. Leeds have got one game in hand.
Yeah, Leeds have had that game in hand, which could be vital. I think that game in hand, is it against United? Am I right in that? I think that's their game that got called off. I could be wrong, but I think that was the game that got called off for them. I think Bournemouth are gone. Not gone, but going. I think Bournemouth and Everton are the two I would definitely say will go down.
Leeds versus Forest is the postponed one from earlier in the season.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. Which is a better chance for Leeds to win that game. And that would lift them level with Forest on points. I think West Ham have too much talent and a good manager. Southampton are the obvious choice because they're bottom and I don't like the manager, so I'm going to say them. But there's something about Leicester this season that just reeks of final day slipping into the bottom three and going down. There's just something, like, defensively, they're so, so bad. And they've just spent the better part of 20 million on left back when they had a decent left back and had no centre back. So Leicester to me, I would say I'll go with the current bottom three, but I think Leicester are the one of the other four, along with Leeds, West Ham and Wolves. I think Leicester are the one who could potentially drop in. So I just think they're so bad defensively.
All right, and the third and final club that I want to look at then is much higher up the league and obviously in a better spot accordingly, but also short of their own targets at the minute. Spurs are a top six club by the usual definitions, yet with Liverpool and Chelsea deciding that, you know, wins and midfields are optional this year, Spurs are somehow fifth in a four-team race for the top four. And Newcastle obviously don't like they're going to be going anywhere anytime soon. So Conte, lots of talk about him and whether he'll depart. Lots of talk that Harry Kane will now stay for the rest of his career and win nothing more than the toss. Where do Spurs go? How do they improve from this point to actually be relevant in terms of not even title talk, but I would say being a much, much closer top three side, let's say. And do you think they'll get top four this season?
It's a very atypical Antonio Conte team. They've conceded 31 goals in 21 games. That's really, really poor. It's poor anyway. It's poor by basically any standard at that end of the league. But it's dreadful for a Conte team. Now, they have scored 40 goals. They scored the third most goals in the league. But they've got the worst defensive record of anybody in the top 12. And you've also got West Ham, Wolves and Everton who've conceded less goals than them. So you've got Forest, who were bottom for ages. Leicester, who were bottom for ages. Leeds, notoriously bad defensively. Bournemouth, who are appalling defensively. and Southampton, who are currently bottom. They're the teams with a worse defensive record than Spurs. That's just so unlike Antonio Conte. I think they've got a major issue in goal. I think Hugo Lloris retired 18 months ago and just didn't tell anybody and just turns up now to get a paycheck and sometimes wanders onto the pitch by accident. I said in the summer what they needed to do was they needed to find the replacement for Lloris, even if it was somebody that would take over next summer, at least to have them in situ this season. If they had them there now, they would be first choice now. I said they needed to address their defence. Eric Dier, I don't want to hear that he's played well. Eric Dier is crap, and he's been crap for years. And the biggest mistake Spurs ever made was not accepting the 40 million that Mourinho offered when he was at United for Dier, because he is awful. Ben Davies is average, and Clement Lenglet is bad. And you're hamstringing Romero, who's having to do far too much and make far too many risky challenges, because he doesn't trust the two that are with him either. That fella knows what a good defender looks like, and he knows that there aren't any other good defenders at Spurs. I think that's the biggest issue. Goalkeeper, middle centre-back, left-side centre-back. Now, the midfield is very stale. It's very boring. It's very by the numbers. But it's not bad. Højbjerg is slow and ploddy, but he's not a bad player. He's a solid 6 out of 10. Sometimes he'll give you a 7 or an 8, but most weeks it's 6 out of 10. Bentancur is a good player, but him and Højbjerg, there's just no... like, who's the dynamic one there? Who's actually going to go and get you the ball back? That was the role for Bissouma, and I think they've been crying out for Bissouma-Bentancur pairing. Now, I know Bissouma hasn't played particularly well this season, but I think if you gave that pairing at least 4 or 5 games in a row together, I think they could build some chemistry and start to really show what they're capable of. The wing-back positions haven't been ideal. Doherty's not a good player. Not at that level. He's fine if you're a bottom-half team. He's not a Champions League caliber player. Jed Spence, for whatever reason, Conte just doesn't like him. So maybe he's not good in the training ground. I don't know. But he should have been given an opportunity. Because how could it be worse than what Doherty and Emerson Royal have put forward this season? How could it be worse? I think the left-back situation's all right, because Sessegnon, I think, has been okay, and Perisic has been okay. And then up front, you've got one very obvious issue, which is that Heung-min Son read that Liverpool were interested in him and decided to play like a Liverpool player this season and has been awful. And then you've got the Kulusevski issue, which is that he can't stay fit for prolonged periods of time. And when he's not there, because that midfield lacks anything resembling dynamism, he has to be the one that links midfield and attack. And when he's not there, nobody else does it. Now, Brian Hill has had a couple of games recently, and he's looked quite good, finally getting an opportunity. And I think they'd be absolutely mental to move him on. I think him as the backup to Kulusevski gives you two players that can do that role. But Son having such a bad season is one big factor. And that mess at the back with Lloris, Dier, and either Davies or Lenglet, that to me is where this team is falling down. And I don't really understand why we're 3/4 of the way through this transfer window, and there has not been one link to a single centre-back, not one link to a goalkeeper. They're signing Danjuma on loan, and they're looking at Zaniolo. Not one link to a centre-back or a goalkeeper. And for me, that's a failure of practice. And I wouldn't be surprised if Conte just says at the end of the season, you know what, lads? Thanks, but piss off. I'm going to go somewhere else where at least people know what they're doing. Paratici's bad at his job. And Daniel Levy, to me, has been disconnected from the club for a couple of years because he's been so focused on building the stadium. Because he did a great job at helping build that first team under Pochettino. And I think he's taken his eyes off things because of the stadium the last few years. And he's allowed a mess to form. And if it wasn't for Conte, I feel like they'd probably be sitting joining us in Chelsea in the middle of the table. And I don't think Conte's had a great season either. I just think he's been able to manufacture a couple of wins for them. And obviously the fact that they have the best number nine in the league.
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit LibertyShield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
I mean, I would place a little bit more blame on Conte than you would. I think he's been pretty terrible setting the team up this season, especially in the biggest of games against the better sides. I think they've largely been poor with that. But overall, even some of the teams that they should be beating, the way they start every single match the same way, I think there's a lot of this season rides on Conte personally. But in terms of the playing squad, I agree almost to the letter there. I think the defence is shambolic. I think the way that they've not addressed it and the players that they did bring in. I mean, Longley was clearly just because they were offered him, he was available, and they haven't got anybody else. And
yeah.
It seems very, very much that, we joke about it, but it seems like Paratici basically has bought the one who was available from his former clubs, and there isn't anybody else available, so he doesn't know where else to go now. And that's all he can do for defensive work. So it's...
We should also highlight that undoubtedly, for me, the Premier League flop of the season is Richarlison.
Yeah, less than 500.
£60 million. Zero goals in the Premier League. Zero goals. Now, I'm not a big fan. I never was a fan. I thought I could see the logic in it because he can play as a nine, he can play off the left. So you've got one player who can be the backup to Kane and Son. He has been awful.
Yeah, I mean, I agreed at the time. This was a decent, an expensive, but a decent addition because he gets them a fourth forward for three positions who are more or less going to be on a similar level to each other. And it's a big difference, or it should be a big difference, playing Richarlison as your change to playing Clinton and G or Victor Jansen or any of the other dross.
Old George's end tap.
For example, yes. But basically, he's done nothing. And he didn't really get too many chances at the beginning of the season, should say that. He definitely didn't get much. He played, was it Champions League game that he scored a couple of goals in, and that was his first basically decent impact. I think it was Marseille, maybe. And in the league, very, very little. Very few starts. Like I said, fewer than 500 minutes played so far this season. So it's not all just on him. Again, I think this is not great management from Conte. But still not really had anything from him. Like, it's still not been any good at all. And
he scored in one game in 18 appearances.
The top five players Spurs have in the Premier League by minutes this season, I think, says a lot about the problematic thing that they've had. They've had the very same lineup on many occasions. Kane, obviously fine. Vice captain, plays up front, top scorer. Okay, fine. Hugo Lloris, terrible season. Højbjerg, middling to good at times season, but not a match winner. Like, he's basically your protector of the defence, which isn't very good.
Yeah.
Eric Dier, whatever. Son Heung-min, well below his level. I mean, that's your five by minutes played, and basically you've got one unqualified success.
Yeah. Like, one success in Kane, one who's been okay in Højbjerg, and three that have been actively poor, two of whom might well be on someone else's payroll, sabotaging your team. Because Hugo Lloris is throwing goals into his own net. And I understand we can criticise Conte for the setup against certain teams, but there's no way you can blame a manager for what happened against Arsenal when Lloris throws a very tame shot that, yes, takes a small deflection, but it doesn't deflect into the goal. It deflects directly at him.
It was going to cross goal and out.
Yeah, it wasn't even like it wasn't going to even worry the net. And then against City, again, he contributes. They have a great first half, and he's been so poor. And Dyer's all over the place. And again, like, Conte should be looking for other fixes for this. And I get that he's working with the players every day, so he sees them every day. But surely to God, somebody else could get an opportunity. Like, Jaffa Tanganga, I know he's not great, but he's played once all season in the league. Once. You couldn't give him a game to see if him on the right and Romero in the middle might work a little bit better. Like, Longley has major flaws, but I can't help but feel that Longley in the middle and Davies on the left would be an awful lot better than Eric Dyer and either of them on the left.
Davinson Sanchez, even as the right-sided one, and Romero in the middle, I think would be...
Romero in the middle, and just see what happens.
Or don't play three of them all the time and use a few other players in a little bit. I know it's not Conte's preference, but again, I think is on Conte. If it's not working, change something.
You won a league title with David Luiz playing centre-back. Maybe stick Højbjerg at centre-back. Maybe just play him there. You're looking for someone that will head it and kick it and be able to play out from the back. Højbjerg is 6'1". He's built like a tank. He could play that role for you. He has played centre-back in the past. Try anything different. Anything. Don't just continue to do the same thing and then look baffled that it's not working. Don't continue to look amazed that Eric Dyer and Hugo Lloris continue to make the same mistakes they were making long before you rocked up at the club. Like, they played Papi Mitar Sarr in midfield a few weeks ago, and I actually thought he played really well. I thought he played really well. It was his first Premier League appearance of the season.
First start, yeah.
And he hasn't appeared since. I don't understand. Bentancur, he's played 8 starts. Not Bentancur, Bissouma, 8 starts. Your midfield has not worked this year. Maybe try the fella that you brought in, that you asked for, by the way. He was one of the few that you asked for.
A few of the others. I mentioned Jaffa Tanganga. Spence hasn't started a game. Lucas Moura hasn't started a league game. Brian Hill has started 2. Lucas Moura hasn't had any. I mean, is he that bad? I don't think so.
I do think Lucas Moura might be checked out, though, because he wants to go back to Brazil. And maybe that's what it is. But I agree. Son has been awful.
Rubbish.
Awful. And he's had 18 starts. Awful.
Spurs.
It's by far the worst season of his career. Drop him.
Spurs haven't won 3 Premier League games in a row this season, which up until, I think it was either just before or just after Christmas, Liverpool hadn't either, actually. But we have now. They've won 3 in a row in all competitions once all season long. That was Brighton, Eintracht, who were down to 10 men, and Everton, because everybody beats Everton. We've already gone over that. That's the only time, and that was back in October. It's so inconsistent. It's so predictable the way they play. I think they're a very, very dull side to watch, Tottenham. I think it's...
Oh, yeah, they're horrible to watch.
From kickoff, you know exactly how... Yeah, Guy points out we've not beaten Everton, but we'll glide past that.
We should point out, though, right, that they haven't been lower than 5th in the league. So we should be fair on this. They haven't been lower than 5th in the league. They've been 5th now for 5 weeks, which includes 3 defeats. Before that, they hadn't been out of the top 4. And they did have a really good first 10 games. They won 7... They drew 2, and they lost to Arsenal away, which isn't a bad result. So the first 10 games you could look at and say, that was really good. The last 10 games, though, they've lost 6. So sorry, the last 11 games, they've lost six of them. Lost six!
I mean, As I say, I've seen a lot of Tottenham this season. They're probably one of the sides outside of Liverpool I've seen nearly all of the games of, and I think that there's a lot more points on the board than the performances would suggest they've earned. I mean, even...
I fully agree. The season. Like, Bournemouth, they should have lost. Leeds, they should have lost.
Brighton, they should have been beaten by heavily.
Brighton should have beat them. Brentford should have beat them. Like, the only impressive result they've had after that first 10 games, the only impressive performance they've had was away at Palace, but Palace were awful. But if you go through their wins this season, Southampton, bottom. Wolves have been bottom for a lot of the season. Forest were bottom for a bunch of the season. Leicester were bottom for a bunch of the season. Everton are in the bottom three. Bournemouth are in the bottom three. They've beaten Fulham twice. They're good results, but they shouldn't be seen as great results, but they are good results because Fulham are having a good season. They beat Brighton away. That's three good results. That's three that I would class as good results. The rest are expected. You expect them to beat Southampton, Wolves, Forest, Leicester, Everton, Bournemouth, Leeds, Palace. You expect them to beat them. But it says a lot about how we view this Spurs team that I'm saying that wins over Fulham and Brighton, two teams they should be comfortably better than, are good results. They're very, very disappointing. And it feels like a massive overhaul might be needed there, because if you were looking at their team and projecting, say, like, what's this team going to look like in the next, can we build a title winner here in the next 3 years? You'd say Harry Kane, Heung-min Son, and Kulusevski could be part of a title-winning team. They're good enough at their best. So the front three is fine. And with Richarlison and Hill, and maybe they'll keep Danjuma after his loan, that could be a really strong backup group, but a really strong attack.
Can we really say that? They have. In 3 years? In 3 years, Son's 33 and Kane is 32.
Yeah, but like, if you've got Richarlison at 26, 27, Hill at 24, Kulusevski at 25, and Danjuma at 28, as a group, I think that's a title-winning group. Because you're not going to have to play Son every game. He can become more of a squad player. I still think Kane is going to be 20 goals a season guaranteed in 3 years. So I do think you could look at that group and say it could be, not that it would be, but it could be a title-winning group. But look behind it. Who else would you say? Maybe Bissouma. Maybe Matar Sarr.
Except Bentancur and nobody else from that midfield group.
And Bentancur, right? So that's three. All three play in centre midfield. If you're playing a 3-4-3, you need at least five centre midfielders. So they need two there. They need both wing-backs. Sessegnon and Spence might be your backups. But you need two starters. And Romero's the only one from the defence and goalkeeper that you would say yes. The only one. So you need to bring in at least five centre-backs, two starters, three backups, and a couple of goalkeepers, a starter and a backup, and Fraser Forster's fine as a third choice. That's a massive amount needed. A massive amount needed in the next 3 years. And that's, like, you need to do those over two summers. And from Tottenham's track record of not spending a whole bunch of money and Paratici being garbage at what he does and potentially having to change the manager, it looks like they're on a road to nowhere. It really does look like they're on a road to nowhere. And at this point, my assumption is that Harry Kane has sort of looked at it and gone, you know what? I'm 29. I'm going to be the all-time Premier League top scorer if I stay in the Premier League. I'm now Spurs joint record scorer. I'm going to play my career out here and I'm going to get records. And if I don't get trophies, at least I'll have records. And if I can win an FA Cup and a League Cup, those will matter more here in terms of how my fans view me than joining Man City and being part of a team that wins another league title. Those would matter more than going to Bayern Munich and winning a bunch of medals. Now, I think Bayern is the right move for him. I think he'd absolutely destroy the Bundesliga, and he'd obviously be a contender to win the Champions League every year. But I think if he could win an FA Cup, a League Cup, and let's say a Europa League with Spurs, I kind of feel like you'd have to say, you know what? Fair play. You sacrificed potential honours to dedicate yourself to one club. Now, some would say it lacks ambition, but I mean, he's going to go down as Spurs' best ever player, I think. And if he can win some silverware there, I think it'll be worthwhile for him.
But for this season, obviously, I'm going to ask, do you think they'll get the top four in the end? I don't. I'll say that now. But I think that this will look like, going into the last 2 months of the season, that they could do. And the reason for that is they play Man City next. That's fine. They'll presumably lose or whatever.
They'll give them a really good game, yeah, though.
But after that, they have a run of 7 games against teams who are struggling horribly. Leicester, West Ham, Chelsea, Wolves, Forest, Southampton and Everton. It's basically the bottom 6 and Chelsea, who are awful. They could win the vast majority of points on offer there in that run of matches without putting in particularly good performances or without sorting out any of their real problems. I don't expect that they'll win them all. I think there'll be, you know, a poor result in there, away to Wolves or whatever. But the points haul that they get across those run of games probably keeps them in touch for the top four.
Do you know what it is? They've got a weird schedule because, like you said, they've got City next, then that 7-game run. Then their following 5 is Brighton at home, which they should win. Bournemouth at home, which if they don't win, Conte just needs to pack up and go home after that one. Then they get Newcastle away, United at home, Liverpool away. That's 3 really tough games in a row. Or it should be, depending on how Liverpool are. But their last 4 is Palace home, Villa away, Brentford home, Leeds away. And if they're in the mix for top 4, if it comes down to the last couple of games, and let's say they go into that last 4 games level on points with Newcastle, as an example, and Newcastle have to play Arsenal at home, Leeds away, Leicester home, Chelsea away, I'd be backing Spurs to get more points than Newcastle. I think Newcastle have overperformed massively this season, and I do feel like they're running out of steam a little bit. I'm not buying this United team at all. I think Ollie Ball is what's got them thus far under Ten Hag. And he'll get praise for being pragmatic in the way Rodgers got praise for being pragmatic when he just abandoned his career-long principles to do something different. But I think Spurs can finish above both of them. The question for me is, can Liverpool and or Chelsea mount any type of charge on the top 4? Because I think if one can, it makes it more difficult. As things stand, I would say yes, I think Spurs will get top 4. Because I think Liverpool maybe have left themselves a little bit too much to do. Now, admittedly, we've played 2 games less than Spurs, and we're only 7 points behind them, but I think they can. Will they? Of Newcastle United and Spurs, they've got the best player in Kane. I think they've got the second best player in Son, and they've got the best manager by a country mile. But the manager and Son have both underperformed this season. I would trust them to figure it out. So I will say, yeah, I think Spurs will get top 4. But they need to go on a good run through those 7 games. Like, you need to be looking at 6 wins and a draw from those 7 games.
I don't think they get that. I don't think they're anywhere near good enough to do that.
But the teams they're playing are so poor.
Yeah, I agree.
Leicester can't defend. West Ham are all over the place. The Chelsea one is tough. Let me reevaluate. I could see them losing to Chelsea because that just seems like a Spurs thing to do. If they can win five, and they should beat Leicester, they should beat Forest, they should beat Southampton. If they could beat Wolves or West Ham and get a draw on the other, I think they'd be setting themselves up well to get top four. Because I think the wheels will come off with Newcastle at some point. Because they're living on that defence. Because right now they're struggling for goals. They're kind of the opposite of Spurs. But I think at some point Newcastle are going to go on a run where they lose, say, 4 out of 7. And I think that's where Spurs will pounce on them. Just by grinding away and never seeming to go. A bit like a fancy zombie dressed up in, you know, North London's finest.
All right, final question. One from Guy, very, very quickly. Richarlison back to the Everton and Danjuma in to replace him at Spurs. Is everybody a winner there?
If they get the same amount of money back that they gave Everton...
Oh, just on loan, I think.
Just on loan.
And Spurs play AC Milan, and they're still in the FA Cup as well, obviously. But
I mean, I'd probably prefer to have Danjuma. I think it would be a move that might suit everybody, but I don't think Spurs would do it, because, I mean, how embarrassing would it be to send your £60 million signing back on loan 6 months after you sign him?
They're not Chelsea, come on.
No, exactly. They are silly, but they're not full-on stupid. Right, so that is that. We will leave that there, and we will be back later in the week to discuss potential sporting directors for Liverpool Football Club. So take care of yourselves, and we will see you soon.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows. Sports Social Podcast Network.